I'd like to go ahead and welcome everybody to the Senate Finance Committee. It's March 23rd, 2009. 4 minutes after 9 a.m. March 23rd. With me today is Senator Ellis, Senator Olson.
Chairman, good morning.
Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas.
Morning.
And we'll be joined in a little bit with Senator Hoffman. He is in town and he has another engagement right now. We have three items on the agenda today, and we've changed the order to facilitate everybody's schedule. First up is going to be Senate Bill 89, which is retirement benefits for the Territorial Guard. And then we'll move on to Senate Bill 125, Alaska Aerospace Corporation. Both those bills, upon the will of the committee, will be transferred off. The third bill, Senate Bill 161, is the appropriation non-transportation stimulus, dealing with the federal stimulus issue at hand. We're going to start that process today. I would expect it'll be take up several meetings and keep us busy until we adjourn out on April 19th, the way it appears. So that'll start that process. So we'll start today with Senate Bill 89, retirement benefits from the Territorial Guard. The committee first heard this bill on February 3rd. The bill was set aside to allow Congress and the Army time to arrive at a solution. We have received a letter from the congressional delegation informing us that the benefits for the Guard will cease and asking the legislature to provide temporary bridge payments until Congress resolves the issue later this year. That letter is in your packet. In the meantime, the legislature is this legislation is necessary to ensure the benefits owed to the Territorial Guardsmen continue to be paid. The intent is to present the CS, take additional public testimony, and then move the bill from the committee if that's the will of the committee. Senator Huggins may have a motion to adopt the CS.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move that we bring CS for Senate Bill number 89 before the committee for consideration.
Version S.
Backslash S.
Okay, and I'll object for discussion, and I'll have the staff come forward. Mr. Peterson. Mr. Peterson, if you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and then walk us through the CS, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Stedman. As you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, we did receive a letter from our congressional delegation, and Senator Huggins' office was working with our office and with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to come up with a new CS in light of the fact that Congress will not be able to continue these payments until the Defense Authorization Bill is passed sometime later this summer or early fall. So Senator Huggins' office with the department was able to put together this CS, which changes the payments to interim payments until the time that the the Army and Congress can resolve this issue and continue the payments. The previous bill just had a set amount, $550 a month, that would be appropriated to each guardsman. This bill now takes into account the amount that they are currently getting paid by the military in retirement versus the amount that they should be getting paid if their Territorial Guard's work was credited. So this bill covers the delta until Congress resolves this issue with the Army and continues the payments. Fiscal note that has been issued by the department, the new fiscal note dated March 20th, reflects a cost of $83,500 for those payments through February 2010. The bill sunsets on that date. If Congress does not resolve this issue before the next legislative session, then the legislature would have to revisit this issue in February of 2010.
Okay. So again, just to recap, this is an interim measure to get us, buy us some time into the fall till Congress can act, and then once Congress acts, then these payments will cease?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. We have any other questions from the committee members? I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. Do we have any other objection to the adoption of the CS? Seeing no other objection, we'll go ahead and adopt the CS as our working document in front of us. Do we have a representative from the administration here? If you can go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is McHugh Pierre, legislative liaison for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
And can you kind of give us a rundown on the administration's support or non-support of this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As you're aware, 26 Alaska Territorial Guard members will be receiving a deduction in their federal pay. They were receiving a federal retirement pay for federal services performed through the federal military. And the Department of Army Division of Personnel decided that the law that was currently on the books did not fully meet the payment requirements for these veterans, and therefore suspending the payment for the time served in the Alaska Territorial Guard from about 1942 through 1946-47. We're certainly proud of this committee for taking care of these elders, these veterans in our state, but we're also disappointed in the federal government at this time of $1 trillion bailouts that they cannot see within them the means to pay $100,000 to cover this delta until the fix is changed. So we appreciate the support of this committee, and we thank you very much for taking care of our veterans.
So then the administration supports this bill. Is that what you're saying?
The administration supports serving veterans, sir.
Okay. And we need fairly quick action on the time frame to make sure that the veterans don't miss payments. Is that still highly likely that we could get the governor's signature and get this in place?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We have it set up right now to where the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs can take care of all the distribution efforts of this bill, and we can do everything in-house, so we have minimal expenses, and we can get this money directly into the hands of the veterans who are in need, the elders in rural Alaska who are in need.
Any other questions from committee members? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. McHugh, on line 10, it talks about the individual reimbursing the department. I just want to make sure that the department has full confidence that if the feds happen to kick in a payment and the department's paid, that this provision does in fact allow and it causes the member to reimburse the department for any payments made.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Huggins, yes, the department will be monitoring this very, very closely, and we are going to make sure that we do not put the veterans in a position where they have to repay us. So we will closely monitor this, and as soon as those veterans start to receive their federal fix, we will make sure that we discontinue payments to them, but we will not do so hastily. We will make sure that they first receive their payments from the federal government in full as they're entitled, and then we will suspend our payments.
Yeah, thank you.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just as a comment, number one, Josh Temple, who is here working on behalf of the Veterans Caucus, has done a lot of good work on this and support. But in addition, I think it's fair to say that every comment that I've heard on this issue has been positive in the sense Alaskan says, let's just do the right thing. If the feds can't, we will. And that's good for them. And in addition, as Senator Olson, Senator Hoppin in particular, because they represent areas that have a high density of ATG guys, I thank them for their support in pushing this forward. So with that, thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When looking at a member who's going to be losing some type of retirement benefit, or at least there's an interruption there, when can he start to assure the bank, if he does have payments, that money is forthcoming and that he can expect funds to be put into his account?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I can only say that as soon as this bill passes through the legislature and is signed, that we will make sure and execute payments as quickly as possible. I anticipate that April, we will need to send out a payment, and we are prepared as soon as this bill moves through to send out a payment in April.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and on behalf of the ATG people that are out there, I appreciate it.
We're going to have a brief address. And do we have any other comments from the, or questions from the committee member? Okay. We're going to.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Thomas.
Just one comment, I guess, not necessarily a question, is we're talking about in 11-month period only $83,000, you know, and I might have been reading when somebody mentioned that number before, but that's a extremely small amount of money for the service that these people perform, so I appreciate you guys' effort on their behalf. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have any other questions? Do you have anybody from the audience I'd like to come forward and speak on this bill? We're on Senate Bill 89. Seeing no other call-ins, Senator Huggins, you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that CS for Senate Bill number 89 be moved committee with individual comments and attached physical note.
Okay, we have a motion to move the bill with individual comments and attached physical notes. Do we physical notes? Physical note. Do we have any objection? Seeing no objection, this bill will then move to the next committee of referral. We'll go on now to the next agenda item. We'll now take up Senate Bill 125, Alaska Aerospace Corporation. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent is to present the bill, take public testimony, and if it's the will of the committee, to go ahead and move this bill forward. And with us today, we have the bill sponsor, Senator Pascavan. If he could come forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Pascavan, if you could introduce yourself and who you represent, and welcome.
My name is Senator Joe Pascavan, the senator from Fairbanks, and with me today is Jeff Stepp, my chief of staff, and if it pleases the committee, if he could present this matter to the Finance Committee, I'd appreciate that.
Sure. If you can introduce yourself and who you represent for the record, and then walk us through the bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Stepp, staff to Senator Pascavan. Senate Bill 125 simply seeks to change the name of the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation to the Alaska Aerospace Corporation. The corporation believes that by dropping the name development from their title, or the word development from the title, it will assist the corporation in securing launch and other aerospace-related contracts that generate significant economic benefits to Alaska by providing long-term, high-paying, stable jobs, by providing local economic diversity, and by creating short-term benefits from projects and construction activities. The name development in the title gives the perception that the organization is a nonprofit administrative body that simply encourages aerospace development in Alaska, rather than an organization that owns and operates space launch facilities that are fully developed and capable of launching rockets. The launch site in Kodiak is operational, functioning, and self-supporting in that no general funds appropriations are needed for operations and maintenance of the site. The small fiscal note before you, which is only $4,500, will be used to pay for new letterhead, stationery, logo, website changes. And that $4,500 will be paid for with federal receipts, not Alaska general funds. So there's no economic impact to the state of Alaska. Mr. Chairman, the name change will help the organization meet its 21st century goals. The new title, Alaska Aerospace Corporation, is unambiguous about their capabilities and will improve their ability to offer launch services to the national and international aerospace market, which benefits both our nation and our state. Thank you for hearing this bill, and I'm available for questions.
Do you have any questions for Senator Pascavan on his bill? the success rate goes up substantially when the fiscal note drops to the basement, and zero can't get any lower than that. That's good. Okay, we have anybody from the audience like to come forward and speak on this bill? We'll go then to online to Mr. Nash. David Nash, does he have any comments on this bill? After you identify yourself and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, this is Dale Nash, CEO of Alaska Aerospace. Mr. Stepp explained it very appropriately. And just as recently as last Friday, I received a phone call from Colorado, people we deal with, that they were inquiring about our status as a nonprofit organization. And we continually have to explain that we are a for-profit, full-service aerospace corporation. And I believe dropping development from the name will go a long ways toward having to explain that repeatedly with each group of people that we run into.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any final questions for Senator Pascanet? Senator Thomas, would you like to make a motion for your colleague?
I would. I would make a motion that the committee pass Senate Bill 125, version backslash A, with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
And we have a motion to move the bill with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral. Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease. We're going to now take up Senate Bill 61, Appropriations Non-Transportation Stimulus. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent is to have the administration present the bill, take some public testimony, and then set the bill aside. We have, most likely we'll have numerous hearings on this bill. There's a lot of component parts to it. We're going to start off with Ms. Rayfield, the OMB director. That'll walk us through it, and we'll have the presentation from the administration. We'll take some questions, and we have ample time. We can run into the afternoon if we have to. So what I'd like to do is get as much of this information as the administration is comfortable with on the table, so then the committee members and their staff could work on this bill, and we can work with the administration on how we want to lay both the items of that want to be included in the stimulus from the administration and the items that are need more explanation or will not or do not have an interest by the administration to put forward, so we can maximize our time between now and April 19th. So at the end of this session, we have no work left undone. With that, Ms. Rayfield, if you can go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and I'll let you walk through the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee. Karen Rayfeld with the Office of Management and Budget. With me today is Joellen Hanrahan. Joellen is our senior policy analyst who is the economic stimulus coordinator for OMB and has done a tremendous amount of work on understanding and going through this bill, working with our departments and working with you and your staff on the various components of the legislation. Before I begin, I just want to make sure that you did receive the documents that I sent over. Clearly, the PowerPoint is before you. Also, I included a one-page summary of SB 161, the items that are included in the bill before you, and then also a list of the items that are not included, which will be, I'm certain, part of the discussion today. There's also a spreadsheet that was attached that included the or describes the items that were not in the bill before you. On our website, of course, and I am certain in your bill packet, you have all of the information on the projects that were included in SB 161. And as I get through my presentation, Mr. Chairman, we do have department representatives here to talk with you about the specific projects that are included in SB 161. As you and I talked, Mr. Chairman, it was to kind of set the framework here to do a high-level overview of the federal law and then in that context talk about what's happened to date with the, at the state level. I just want to recap briefly where we have been. The as you know, in February, we presented you with the transportation appropriation bill that will deal with federal highway transit and aviation projects. And then on Thursday of last week, we presented you with a second appropriation bill, again for capital projects that are non-transportation related. Also, through our operating budget process, we have submitted two amendments to you to consider the increase in the federal Medicaid reimbursement. So you have about $128 million before you in consideration in FYO 9 and 10 operating budgets related to Medicaid. I just want to say before we start through the presentation that the governor has not rejected any of the funds that are currently in the federal economic stimulus package. She's been very clear about her desire to have an ongoing discussion about the items that are not currently in the bill before you to make sure that we understand fully the requirements of the specific programs and also the expectations of what would happen in 2 years when the federal funds are no longer available. There are very rigorous oversight requirements as well in the law, and as we go through the presentation, I think that will point out and highlight some of the areas that we have concerns about.
Ms. Rayfeld, if we could just, as for those watching at home, this is going to probably get fairly detailed as we go forward the next couple of weeks, three, 4 weeks, but the public discussion, is the administration looking at the legislature to do the public discussion in this forum like we have today? Or is the administration going to do some kind of like a roadshow like we did with some of our oil issues around the state to get input and public participation? Because we in the legislature obviously can't leave town between now and the 19th of April.
Mr. Chairman, our hope was that because of the active and ongoing committee process, which is the public process, that you would entertain a discussion with the public on the various operating and capital requests and items in the economic stimulus package as you work the particular bills, not only the operating bill that I know you're preparing to close out, but also the supplemental and other appropriation bills that are being discussed.
So the public process is going to be with the legislature?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The governor thought it was appropriate to have this debate in the context of the budget bills that are currently before the legislature.
Okay. Thank you.
So if we can move through the presentation, I'll try to hit on these items fairly quickly so that we can get to the specifics of the bill. But what is the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act? It is a very complex piece of legislation. I'm sure many of you have looked at the bill or even tried to work your way through the pages of the bill, but it totals $787 billion in stimulus funds that are designed to accelerate the nation's economic recovery. About $288 billion of the act is targeted to tax relief, and the rest would come to the state through various, or to the states in various federal programs. Governor has asked our departments to look very carefully at the requirements in the law and determine what's required for the state to receive funds. This particular slide gives you just a high-level snapshot of the various program areas within the legislation. And you can see, of course, the biggest piece is the tax relief. And then we also are looking at the state and local fiscal relief piece, infrastructure, protecting vulnerable citizens, health care, education, and energy. So there's a number of components within the bill. The objectives of the legislation were fairly straightforward: to preserve existing jobs and to create new ones, to stabilize our state and local economies, and then to reinvest in infrastructure and to invest in longer-term solutions like energy and our research areas so that we can continue to build and grow our economy. There are a number of specific requirements at the program level for timelines, but the major areas are to get at least 20% of the Recovery Act funds to occur between now and October of this year, another 38% to happen before October of 2010, and then to have at least 80% of the stimulus-related funding on the street by October of 2011. There are specific distribution methods that are outlined in the law. The first two on the slide, formula programs and demand, are really the bulk of the area that would come to the state of Alaska through legislative authorization and appropriations. So we've included just some examples of the Medicaid, the highway funds that come through existing formula allocations to states. Demand means things that would be caseload driven or workload driven. On the third item, where we have a variety of competitive grant processes, these would be open to states, communities, nonprofits, and other organizations. So if the state were to go forward and compete for funds, of course it would require legislative authorization for us to receive and expend. Number four and number five really relate more to the federal government itself and funding that would be available through those federal agencies to allocate funds to the states. There is also, as I mentioned earlier, unprecedented accountability requirements in this law. There are existing frameworks that we have for formula programs to track and report expenditures, which will be helpful. Also in the act, we see appropriations in every federal agency for inspector general funding, which means there is going to be significant requirements for states to ensure that these funds are spent appropriately and as required under the law. There's a federal recovery review board. There are expedited timelines for application and obligation of funds. And as you may recall, late last week, we were assuring the legislature and the public that the state would continue to meet these timelines for the various programs within the act, so that once we have made the decisions on what funds to receive and expend, we will not have missed an opportunity by failing to have filed the required timeline paperwork and applications. The governor's certification, as you know, has been an area of discussion here. This is required, as you know, by April 3rd, and this is the language in the law known as the Section 1607 requirement. No later than 45 days after enactment of the law, the governor shall certify that will request and use the funds, and the funds will be used for to create jobs and to promote economic growth. And this is why the governor believes so strongly that it's important that we engage the public in a discussion here to make sure that when she signs those assurances that federal funds that we use will create jobs now and in the future. We want to make sure that the federal funds are targeted and that they won't result in some unrealistic expectations in the future about the state coming in and picking up these programs with general fund dollars. And there are some areas where we will have policy considerations that we need to address. There are a number of other certifications and assurances required in the law, and I wanted to highlight for you some of the things that we have done proactively to make sure that we are able to use these funds. One, of course, is unemployment insurance. There was an increase in the weekly benefit of $25. That was signed on the 18th of February, and the Department of Labor has been able to make those funds available. Under the Department of Transportation in March, there was a required certification that the governor signed on the 12th that the state would continue to maintain the state fiscal effort for receipt of the transportation funds, and then also a delegation to the Commissioner of Transportation that says the state will make sure that the projects funded through stimulus dollars meet the appropriate federal requirements and that their appropriate use of taxpayers' dollars. Energy is another area of assurance that we'll need to make, and we'll talk about that a little bit further in the presentation because that's a significant piece, policy question that will need to be decided with the legislature. This is the estimated allocation of stimulus dollars that would come to state government in Alaska. This doesn't represent dollars that may go directly to municipalities or other organizations. But it does reflect our preliminary estimates of what's available. And these estimates change because as our federal agencies further refine their allocations to states, those have continued to move a bit. But these are this is the best information we have for you today. And as you can see, of the amount allocated to come through state appropriations, we have requested $514 million for capital projects, about 55%, and then the Medicaid piece that I referenced earlier, which is 14% roughly, or $128 million. So the area that has not yet been determined, and those items that I know we'll be discussing further, is about $288 million of operating and some capital items that have not been included at this point.
Mr. Rayfield, if I could just stop here. Mm-hmm. Maybe kind of explain to the public how you perceive the discussion going forward with these three pieces of the, or basically two pieces of the pie, one being the pending 31%, and then the rest of it, how you perceive the public process going forward to make it clear to the citizens around the state what's included, what's excluded, and so we can have a smooth process.
Mr. Chairman, what we have done over at OMB is put as much information as we can on our website. So you will see posted there not only the individual project requests that are included in the legislation before you currently, but you will also see there the project descriptions for each of the items that are not included. In that way, you would have the information, the public would have the information. If they wanted to come forward with public testimony or if the legislature wants to specifically address any of those projects that are not currently before you or operating items, we're trying to put as much information as we have on the web so that will help facilitate the discussion.
Thank you.
We have, and I know I've mentioned this, so I won't spend a lot of time on this slide. submitted legislation in three areas, the transportation, the non-DOT, and the Medicaid pieces that are before you. And I just wanted to quickly highlight that in the DOT bill, of course, the amount of authorization requested exceeds the amount of the actual allocation that we've identified for highway, transit, and aviation projects. And the reason for that is some contingency funds, so there would be some ability to, if some projects couldn't get moving, you'd have some flexibility, or if there were other funds available as a result of other states not being able to utilize theirs, we'd be in a position to advance. So I just wanted to clarify that because the difference in the dollar amount on the bill and what we have on the spreadsheet is different.
And just for those that are watching at home, the discussions that some of the members of the legislature had with the federal Department of Highways, number two man said that there's little chance that there would be excess funds not used by other states and then being reappropriated around to the other states to not put a very high likelihood that that's going to happen, because it does seem when we get into this, not only this stimulus bill but the other component parts of what we're dealing with, that we have some mixed messages going out to the public, and we need to try to make it as clear as we can, because it's very complex. And there is not 461 we can expect, but rounded off 263 million DOT projects.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. It will be very important for us to try to keep all of these pieces as clear as we possibly can. Of course, when we introduced the bill in February, we were going on the information that we knew at the time, and as we've continued to get more and more information from our federal agencies, we're trying to update that. So I think that will help us as we go through the process, but there's a lot of moving items and changes, so it will be important to keep our website as updated as we can and get information to you as quickly as we can. This snapshot, Mr. Chairman, is again just another look at the pieces that we have included in legislation before you. I don't know that I need to run through them specifically. We've got agencies here that are going to present the individual project requests, but this is again another way to look at transportation. Represents about 41% of the items in legislation before you. Environmental conservations, water and sewer projects represent about 11% of the total. The University of Alaska's research vessel is 18%. Revenue has a number of public housing items before you at 6%. The education piece is about 3%. And then Medicaid roughly would be 20% of what we've requested before you today. So just another way to look at what's coming. So the next slide is really, what do we need to discuss? What are the open items? There are a number of policy issues that represent roughly 73 million of what's pending, and those include statewide policy or code changes that may affect individuals or businesses, statutory changes that would perhaps impact the way a state agency does their business and ultimately affect the public. There may be some permanent or increased liability to the state and employers from some of these changes. Under the operating items and capital items that were not included, we have, of course, the whole discussion about the one-time nature of the funds, how we can manage the expectations moving forward, and then also to look for the opportunities that the state could benefit from these one-time dollars if we don't increase the long-term cost to the state. So we want to have that full range of discussion on these items before we make these budget decisions. One of the biggest areas, of course, that we've talked about and will, I'm sure, need to continue to discuss is the energy assurances that are required under Section 410 of the Act. And specifically, I wanted to highlight the code requirements. There's an actual requirement that the state will implement an energy code for residential buildings and an energy code for commercial buildings. And then, in addition to that, that we will achieve compliance with these at least 90% within an 8-year period. So there are a number of questions related to how best to do this. There are, and I know we've seen some conflicting information from the U.S. Department of Energy on exactly which programs this these assurances are attached to. So we clearly need written guidance from the Department of Energy, and we've asked for that guidance. There are a couple of places in the law itself that actually are a little bit of subject to interpretation. In one area, it clearly says the state funds coming under the state energy program, the $28.6 million, is linked to the assurances. In another place, it references all three of these programs being subject to the insurances. So that's why the federal guidance is going, written federal guidance is going to be so important. But regardless of whether it applies to one or three of the programs, the discussion about what a state energy code would need to look like and what our ability to implement that would be is, I think, important. There are other timelines in here, application timelines, and as I stated earlier, we want to make sure we don't miss a timeline that would then potentially not allow us to move forward if a resolution of this is made. We have been told through email correspondence with the U.S. Department that the March 23rd deadline, which is today for an initial application, will not need to be submitted. The May 12th date is also in their written guidance. So we're working with the Department of Energy to try to sort through those before we have to complete our application.
On this item, the energy program, they're just trying to, I guess, unsort some of the public information that's been projected out. So there's still some confusion on what's in and what's out as far as strings attached dealing with more stringent codes, dealing with the eligibility, like for the weatherization program, or has that been concluded?
Mr. Chairman, we've talked to different people in the Department of Energy and gotten different interpretations. So what we are really looking for is written guidance from them that says if all three of these programs are subject to the assurance or if it only applies to the state energy program. That will be important to us as we move forward on making decisions about what goes in the budget or not. But if it is the assurance applies to the state energy program, then we still need to have the discussion about the state energy code, what that would look like and what would need to pass the legislature in order for us to implement a state energy code.
So has the finance committees been copied on those letters?
Pardon me?
The finance committees, have they been copied on those letters that you're sending to the feds back east?
Mr. Chairman, we've been working with your staff on that and sharing, I think, the email communications with the folks in the building that have been working on this topic. So that your staff are aware of the challenges we've had with getting a written guidance. So as soon as we get that, you will have it.
And for those watching at home, what Ms. Rayfield is referring to, I think, is the legislative budget and audit consultant that they have. That's as an interface.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, and then the finance committee staff that you have assigned to it as well.
So is there any idea on a timeline when we could get to a conclusion on these? Because as an example, weatherization sticks out as a prime item that we don't want to pass up if there's little to no strings attached, being in the geographic location the state is.
Mr. Chairman, we are trying to get that written guidance from the U.S. Department of Energy as soon as we possibly can. I believe that they recognize our need for the information with our legislature in session and to make these decisions. go to the next slide. Okay. Mr. Chairman, and just to highlight, I think some of the questions are that in on the energy code discussion would be the cost versus the savings to homeowners of having a statewide energy building code. The cost of enforcement is going to be a question, of course, and how we do that at the state and local levels. If there are local control issues where there are already existing codes, and would a state code impact that in some way, and then just ongoing costs for this, the state programs. Another area, a policy discussion, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, that we'll need to have is under the Department of Labor and changes to the unemployment insurance program, basically changing the base period for which we calculate eligibility. If we implement or change the law, that will increase the number of individuals that could be eligible. The Department of Labor had estimated that there would be potentially a $2 million annual impact on the UI Trust Fund. That information was based on 2008 information. I'm sure those numbers would be updated from time to time. But our best estimate at this point is that it would be about a $10 change in the cost per worker to the employer, and a 0.03 increase in the employer rate charge. So there, again, this is an area that will require legislation. This impacts about $15.6 million in federal funds that would be available to the state of Alaska if we don't move forward making the change. So this is an area that we would need to have the discussion with the legislature, and of course a bill to pass in order for us to accept these funds. This, Mr. Chairman, is a snapshot of, again, the pending items, the $288 million that's not before you in the bill. And I don't know how much time you want to spend this morning talking about this, but I thought we should highlight this and go to the items with the departments that are in the bill. But the biggest piece, as we know, is under the Department of Education, about $171 million, and it comes in several pieces. Biggest piece is what you call the Fiscal Stabilization Fund. And in that, there are about 81.8% of that, or $93 million, roughly, would be allocated to school districts across the state based on their Title I eligible students. So there's a formula application for distributing the $93 million to school districts, and there was some parameters about what they could use that money to spend on. At this point, we've only included of the stabilization funds in bills before you the 18%, which was basically the flexible portion of the funding. $20.7 million is included in the capital bill, SB 161, in front of you, that would be available for education or job training projects. We have not designated those pieces. Within the stabilization fund, there are some assurances, again, that the governor would need to make in order to receive the funds, that we are meeting standards, specifically in career and technical standards in our assessment systems, that we have data systems in place to track progress of students from pre-kindergarten to through college and career. There are teacher quality assurances and distribution of qualified teachers through your Title I schools, and then effective interventions for your low-performing schools. So there are some specific assurances that the governor will need to make if we move these funds forward. Also in education, there's funding allocated for Title I, the regular formula under Title I that would flow through to school districts, special education funding, some technology funds. There are food assistance programs, services for homeless students, school lunch program, and some funds from the National Endowment of the Arts that would then go to the Arts Council.
If I could stop just for a minute on education, can we parse this, or do we have to take all of it? Or has that been concluded yet? There seems to be some information that says that we have to take all of it or none of it.
Mr. Chairman, under the stabilization funds, well, I think we would need to get some specific guidance from the U.S. Department of Education if we could actually separate out the $93 million and the $20 million. I don't know that we could actually only accept the $20 million. It may be the case where if we would have to apply for the funds and turn back a certain portion if the state did not want to accept the 93. But that would all have to be worked through the U.S. Department of Education and what the guidance is. My guess is that there are going to be some challenges only accepting one part and not the other. Under the Department of Revenue, we've talked about the biggest piece in there, of course, is the parts related to the energy programs that we've just talked about. There's a smaller piece in here that has to do with the Child Support Enforcement Division, and it's a little bit of a different item than the rest of the stimulus funds, similar in my mind to Medicaid, where the federal government is basically extending a regulation currently in place to allow us to count federal funds as those federal incentive payments as part of the match. When we put our operating budget in front of you at the time, we didn't know they were going to extend it, so we had included an additional general fund to make up for the loss of federal funds in this situation. And now the stimulus funds are available. So I think at this point we're probably going to need to talk some more about that, but it is similar to Medicaid as long as the feds are going to continue to allow us to use those incentive payments. We may want to amend the budget to include this, but for now the discussion is about when the funds are no longer available in 2 years, we'll have to ratchet back up our state contribution.
If we could, I think there's been some communication with between the legislature and your office and the detail that we'd be asking you today, and we recognize that the complexity of this is no minor matter, that we're going to work with OMB to come forward and when they're ready. And for instance, on revenue, parse each one of these particular items that you have in your Excel sheet, so we can take a look at them, one at a time. So just for the people watching at home, we're going to be going into much more detail than today. We're trying to get an overview today. But if I could ask Mr. Falsky from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, he's online. What is the status of the state of Alaska's building codes relative to what appears to be requested by the federal government in Alaska Housing's opinion?
Mr. Chairman, Dan Falsky. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Falsky. If you could identify who you represent and then help us with the question, I could repeat it if you need to.
If you would, please, sir. This is Dan Falsky, CEO of Alaska Housing. I want to make sure I heard all of it.
Well, the question is, where does Alaska stand in their code requirements dealing with energy versus what is being asked of us by the federal government to receive these funds, and particularly which items do you feel need to be possibly addressed with further legislative work, and which items we could take without altering our statutes?
Mr. Chairman, again, Dan Falsky here. With ACWARM, the software, but more importantly, BEES, the Building Energy Efficiency Standards that are in state statute, which restricts, or not restricts, but any loan or mortgage or activity that HFC is involved with, the homes, the resident structure must adhere to BEES before we can loan money on it. We've been doing this for a number of years. I think I don't have the exact details in front of me, but I know we probably lead the nation in that regard in terms of energy statutes. BEES is restricted to AHFC, if you will, and it is not st- statewide. In other words, outside lenders, Fannie, Freddie, Countrywide, those that you hear the names most frequently, are not restricted or forced to use, adhere to Bs if they lend money in this state. So one of the questions we've had in dealing with Karen and her staff was, where do we go down the line in terms of code restrictions on a statewide building energy code, and how will that affect other outside lenders? Will they have to operate within that sphere, or will it again just be Alaska Housing Finance Corporation or statewide entities, which I think is a different question than what Karen was referring to. In other words, under the SEP, the state energy program, at the $28 million, the weatherization at the $18 million, and then we had block energy grants at another $8 million, I think a total of around $54 million, if I'm correct. All three of those were the question that Karen and her folks had put forward to Department of Energy, going, which one of these, or do all of them, fall under the domain of the state energy grant? And that's a very valid question that I support what Karen and what the governor said, is we need an answer to that moving forward on these money.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Go ahead and continue.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, given time, I'm not going to go through the specific slices of these pies so that we can...
We have lots of time.
Oh, you would like me to do that? Okay.
We have till April 19th. We need to...
Well, then I will continue to highlight some of the areas that are not in here. Department of Labor, again, as I mentioned, the piece that is specific to change in the alternate base rate that we talked about earlier, and there are some also other employment services and training funds, pieces for vocational rehabilitation and independent living services that are not included currently before you. Health and social services, about 3.4%. There are a number of pieces in there. The biggest one probably is the Child Care Development Block Grant Program, about $3.2 million. Dollars that would be available to expand that existing program. There are electronic health records, some funds for food stamp programs, the immunization program, and infant learning. Also a small piece for the senior meals program that is not currently included in the bill before you. Under public safety, we're looking at components of the justice assistance grants, some grants to the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and STOP grants, service training officer program grants. Some of these are competitive. As we know, going down the road, if the department is successful in competing for these grants, we would have an opportunity through LBNA to come before you, but there are also some questions because the ongoing funding for any new positions created through these competitive programs would be state general fund. So we think that's an important conversation to have with the legislature. And under the Department of Commerce, there are some specific programs for Serve Alaska, some expansion of the community development block grants and community services block grants under the Department of Commerce. The two block grants are would be capital items and not operating. Under the Department of Environmental Conservation, there is a question. There's an existing program for diesel emissions. The question basically is if the department is going to be able to receive these funds and then grant them to non-state entities, they would need granting authority. It's not specifically tied to a federal requirement in the law. It's simply that the Department of Environmental Conservation at this point does not have the granting authority. So a very small amount of money has come to the department in the past and has gone to basically to the Department of Transportation to deal with diesel emissions. So that's a consideration before us.
So we have roughly $215.5 million of items previous to the environmental conservation, your last item you discussed, that are on the table that we need to have some public discussion on and review of, and the administration lists them as operating items not requested pending additional budget decisions. And then the other category is items not requested dealing with Alaska housing, which we just went over, totaling about $72 million. So how does the administration, or how, what would the administration, what process would the administration like to proceed on with the Finance Committee to lay this out in the public discussion so we can have that conclusion made in ample time to get out of here on time on April 19th?
Mr. Chairman, clearly the Finance Committee process, if the committee were willing to have a discussion about all of these, not only the items that are before you in the appropriation bills that we have submitted, potentially looking at these things that are not included so you can do your due diligence, ask the questions, get the public testimony, that would be an approach.
So we can then ask you to come forward with these in line item form, and we can walk through them much like we do the capital bill or any other bill, and we can address each one of these. For instance, the senior citizens issue, and there's a lunch program issue, a few things like that. We can talk about each one of those, and then we can make the policy call to either include it or exclude it, or agree to disagree on inclusion or exclusion. Is that how you perceive it, or?
Mr. Chairman, certainly that would be an approach that would get the information out. The discussion really is on many of these programs will be, of course, the ongoing expectation. If we are expanding our existing programs, what do we currently have in the operating budget for the fiscal year 2010 that's before the legislature now? How in expanding or increasing the amount of funds through these various programs would be targeted and used, and then at the end of the time period, what would the expectation be? As I mentioned earlier, we will have, or I think this morning we have, all of the individual line items posted on our website. So you have detail on those available to you, and that certainly could be utilized for the discussion.
Correct. So we can then work with your office to have the administration come forward on each individual item when they're ready, and maybe we can categorize them so it's not so confusing to the public that comes in and out of these discussions when they watch the public process proceed, so they can follow it at home and make it actually easier in the building for members that aren't on the finance committees.
Mr. Chairman, that I think that would be an appropriate way to go.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Well, I'd just like to add one other quick note when we talk about the impact on the budgets. We've over the last several years have been very concerned on the growth of the operating account here at the Finance Committee. So we are definitely in tune with concerns on future impacts. But we also recognize that the operating account is, depending on how you want to measure it, up maybe 25% over the last 3 years. So we'll always be looking at several years out in the impacts of any of these items that we may include or we may exclude. So they won't be made in a vacuum.
Mr. Chairman, and I agree, these have been, that's exactly the reason that we believe it's important to talk about each one of these items very carefully and what the ongoing expectation is going to be if we choose to accept the funds. And maybe the next slide is just kind of lays the, or frames the discussion perhaps on the use of these funds. They are one time. The federal government is going to make these available to us one time through this American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. If we use them for salaries, it may delay, but not necessarily prevent layoffs in the future. If we expand services to Alaskans through these, then it, of course, when the federal funds are no longer available, the additional services will end. If we increase capacity at public safety and for positions there, there will be ongoing costs, and that may very well be an area that the legislature and the administration want to pursue, but I think it's important to have the discussion before we put them in the budget. And then if there are permanent changes that would create an expectation for continuing these when the federal funds are no longer available, it would increase the operating budget. So I think this is all good discussion to have before we make those decisions. On the accountability piece, as I mentioned earlier, it's a very significant component of the Act. The reporting, the tracking of these expenditures are a significant piece. The Inspector General function has been beefed up in ways we have never seen before. So I think it's really unprecedented, and this all of us at the state level and any recipient of these funds is going to be under significant scrutiny, and we're going to have to do this right and follow the law. The accountability attaches to the governor, and what we're really saying by that is the governor is having to certify in a number of areas that all these things will be followed and done correctly. And these, what we're calling ladder certifications, could go down to the recipient level. So for an example, if we choose to put forward all of the education funds that are not currently before you, there may be some additional requirements to school districts through the Department of Education that they make those assurances and meet those assurances so that we can know that those monies are going to be used appropriately, and that clearly there's an understanding that there's one-time nature of the funds, and that these aren't to be used to supplant other funds. So I think that will be an important part of the discussion as well.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Just a statement, Mr. Chairman, to Ms. Rayfield. I would encourage administration to treat these as minimum requirements, and that we exceed the requirements of reporting, because Alaskans do not want an AIG in their own backyard. I think we're proud of our record of being frugal in our approach to spending dollars. So I would encourage us to view these as minimum and exceed that minimum.
Could you, Senator Huggins, I get you to repeat the question? I didn't hear all of it.
Right. Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, that on pay or correction on slide number 20 under accountability, that these accountability requirements be viewed as the minimum, and that we as a state exceed those minimums so that we are accountable to ourselves, not the federal government. That's the minimum piece. I think we can do better than their standards. Thank you.
What we've been working on, just for the folks at home that are watching, and legislative finance, which is our finance arm of the legislature, has set up a separate fund code. So we'll then channel all this money from this bill through that fund code, so we'll be able to track as time goes on the money that's come in through this stimulus program and see what impacts it has or doesn't have on future budgets. And we've been working with OMB on that issue, so we're trying to make sure that we'll always be able to separate it out in a separate column for the committee members and the public to take a look at. And and I would agree with Senator Huggins of the federal requirements would be the minimum we should shoot for.
Mr. Chairman, also, of course, at the federal level, at the agency level, they're setting up their own tracking numbers, their CFDA numbers, specific to the programs. And as I said, there are significant expenditure and reporting requirements. So we'll package those all together, but it will be very helpful. The separate tracking of the federal economic stimulus dollars through the budget system will be helped by that separate code. So some of the things as we discuss these, I think it's questions that we need to be able to ask and answer is, are we fully utilizing federal funds that we're currently receiving? Is the state ready and willing to accept these one-time funds? Or will there be an expectation in the future that we'll backfill as these federal funds are no longer available? And has the public had an opportunity to be informed, and hopefully through our discussions and the process here with the committee and the decisions then that we make ultimately on whether or not to include these funds, the public would be part of that process. I think it's also important for us to discuss what the potential benefits are to the state of Alaska from the use of economic stimulus funds, if we are able to target them as one-time, for one-time activities and items. And just some examples might be teacher training or expanding the use of technology, some of the particular devices that would be available to help with employment or living independently. So, you know, things that we could do that perhaps would not create the expectations that the state would then pick up an operating program. So if we can look for opportunities where we could make good use of the one-time dollars without impacting the long-term cost to the state, I think that's a discussion worth having as well. And then, Mr. Chairman, just to alert you to the website that we do have up, that we are making updates to on virtually a daily basis. We have stimulus information as it relates to Alaska. We have links out there to the federal sites, to grants.gov. We have all the information on the appropriation bills that are before you in the backup, the items, of course, that we've talked about this morning that aren't in the bill. We've got individual fact sheets for the departments with the program-specific requirements. Those, they're not all on there yet, but we're putting them up as quickly as we get those completed. So that will be a site of, I'm hoping, that would be of good use to you and to your staff and to the public to go on and see where we are with these particular items. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would, if we have agency representatives here who could speak to the pieces that are in SB 261 in front of you, and if you'd like to go through the agency review of those proposals.
Would you like to bring them up one at a time? How would you be comfortable with laying this information out?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be great.
We'll just have a brief at ease.
Thank you.
come back on the record. We're going to start the process today. We're having a discussion whether we should just walk through the bill, but we decided what we'd do is Ms. Rayfield would like to just walk through the spreadsheet that references the bill. It's the two-pager titled Economic Stimulus, March 19, 2009. Again, those are the inclusions in the bill. And not today, but in the near future, we'll be walking through the exclusions, item by item with the departments, talking about the pros and cons of those. So at the end of the process, we'll have done all of the inclusions, all of the exclusions, and it would better facilitate a discussion of any modifications that the administration and or the legislature might want to see.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start on line 2 of the spreadsheet. This is the Department of Education's request under the state fiscalization program. We have not allocated this particular item to a specific project. These are, as I mentioned earlier, the flexible funds included under the stabilization program. Of course, we would suggest that we target these for education and training. Some of the items that we had considered would be, for example, one-time funds that could assist the Department of Education in providing statewide service, either through technology, distance delivery, improvements to their systems that might be helpful to helping our schools do a better job, providing some of the intervention programs that are so helpful to districts who are struggling. And also, of course, we have a significant deferred maintenance list for school projects. So there are a number of areas and ways that we could approach these dollars. We do not have them allocated at the moment in the bill before you.
And when would you be able to bring your draft allocation to the committee for us to review?
Mr. Chairman, we could certainly bring our suggestions to you, but again, we were trying to keep these open for discussion with the legislature. So, but we can get those to you.
Right.
And so, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just go ahead and have the individual agencies come up and walk through the spreadsheet with you and give you the background on each one of these projects. So I'd invite the Department of Environmental Conservation to come forward.
See, there's five items here, and if you can go ahead and introduce yourself and who you represent, and then just walk down the item in chronological order, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mike Maher. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for DEC. The first project is $23,637,000 Alaska Clean Water Stimulus. That is money that would go through our municipal matching grant program to eligible communities. If you remember correctly, last week or the week before when we testified on our capital budget, we had roughly $23 million included in the governor's budget for that program right now, and this would just add to that and allow us to go down the prioritized list for the larger municipalities.
So there's no intent then to reorganize the list? We're just going to continue on down as the list was last modified a month or so ago?
Mr. Chairman, that would be my understanding.
And I think we have access to all that.
Pardon me?
We have.
Yes.
That's accessible online for the folks at home that want to look at that.
The second one, Mr. Chairman, is $19,500,000 Alaska Drinking Water Stimulus. This, again, is funding that would flow through our missile grant program and essentially provide, just as I stated before, we'd be able to include more communities this year, or next year, excuse me. The The third one, Mr. Chairman, is the LUST program, Leaking Underground Storage Tank, $1 million. We have presently a little over 500 open LUST sites in Alaska. This $1 million would allow us to complete anywhere from 10 to 20 cleanups or removals on various sites. And again, there's a priority list of projects there based on need. The next one is $24,260,000 Village Safe Water Stimulus. This would go through our Village Safe Water program. As we testified a week ago, there's roughly $700 million in need out there. This would add to the roughly $90 million that's in the governor's budget for these projects. Part of it, at this point, we can't provide you a list on some of it because it's going to come through the as tribal assistance grants. And we've offered the, given up a list to the Indian Health Service. And it's my understanding that they will use that list to pick projects that we will go forward with.
And then you could send that list on to the Finance Committee and we take a look at that information also.
Yes, sir, we sure will. The last one for DEC is $240,000 water quality planning. This funding would be distributed via grants or contracts. It's an ongoing program to, be grants for stormwater projects, environmental assessments, green infrastructure assessments. In addition to the 40% pass-through requirement, the legislation requires 20% be spent on green infrastructure, water, energy efficiency improvements. And that's the last project for DEC.
So the so this is just all extra money going to the lists. We're just so we can all go grab our lists and work down them. And
that's correct. We're not attempting to supplant anything that's currently in the governor's budget in either the municipal matching grant program or Village Safe Water. This is an addition to. The other thing I might add is in the Village Safe Water program. Via the use of force accounts, and this really does put people to work out there in the villages and the smaller communities, and not only building but also in maintenance of some of these projects in the future.
And we can get these under contract in an allotted time?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the next item is a placeholder, and as I believe I mentioned in my earlier presentation, this would be a $1 million placeholder for the executive branch so that if agencies are actually successful in competing for a capital grant that we don't have before you at the moment, that we could potentially bring that to LBNA for consideration if the timing worked out that it was in an interim rather than when the legislature was in session. So we've included a placeholder here and also under the University of Alaska for those potential opportunities. Then, Mr. Chairman, Department of Labor would be next.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Guy Bell, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Labor and Workforce Development. There is one item in the appropriation bill for the Department of Labor. It's in the amount of $3 million for the Alaska Vocational Technical Center. This $3 million would allow us to, it would support funding for the replacement culinary building at the Alaska Vocational Technical Center in Seward and enable an upgrade to the school cafeteria. Last year, the legislature appropriated just over $8.6 million to the department toward this project. The cost estimates from the architectural firm and cost estimator came in higher. This is a shovel-ready project, and we had intended to go forward with the $8.6 million at a lower level. In other words, some of the work we were not going to move forward with through this additional $3 million, we will be able to complete the entire facility, and we expect it to be ready for occupancy in late 2010. Just to note, this, we have applied for these funds from the Economic Development Administration. The application is still under review.
So can we then go in and offset the FY10 capital budget with this item?
Mr. Chairman, if the general fund portion were to be reduced, then we would not achieve the level of upgrades to the, especially to the student cafeteria, that we had hope for when we presented the budget last session.
So the answer to that is no.
The short answer, Mr. Chairman, would be no.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next department is Natural Resources. Thanks, God.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lita Simons. I'm the Support Services Director for the Department of Natural Resources. We have one project on the list. It is Forestry and Fire Economic Stimulus, Fire Fuels and Forest Management. And this project is basically a tree cutting project. It's going to provide for hazardous fuels reduction and wood to energy projects that will minimize the risk of wildland fire to homes and community infrastructures while providing wood energy and employment. We have submitted our projects for consideration to Forest Service, and they have told us that we will be receiving $1.5 million in economic stimulus funds for these projects. I don't believe we as yet, though, have the actual project list approved.
So what does that mean? Are you going to – I don't understand what it is.
Mr. Chairman –
Then we'll go to Senator Thomas, you have something that you want to add?
Well, yes, and I was just curious. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would this be projects similar to the ones that have been discussed in the interior, where the black spruce would be removed from areas that are close to subdivisions or public structures? Is that the type of project you're talking about here?
Through the chair, Senator, there are a variety of projects that are being submitted, and the funding is going to be passed through to local governments. And the local governments will make determinations, as they've already submitted the applications for various projects. And so they will be doing various cutting projects that are, as you say, to eliminate hazardous fuels in areas where that's possible, and also turn some of that into fuel for wood stoves and those types of projects. But I don't, as of yet, have a list of where the projects will actually be.
And when do you feel you'll have that list for us to review?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know yet when we'll have that. I would expect that we would have it very shortly. These projects are short turnaround times as far as implementation. So from the time that we are awarded the funding, some of them are 7-day implementation, others are 30-day implementation. So I would expect that I would have some information on specific projects within, I would hope, the next 10 days.
Thank you. Senator Huggins.
Yes, Lita, and this item, is it done within your present authorized personnel strength?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, we will be able to use our firefighting crews. Mostly what we expect will happen is we'll be passing the funds through to the municipalities, and in many cases they'll turn around and hire us back to do the work, and we will use our firefighting crews. We'll just be putting them on earlier and utilizing them at this time of year prior to the firefighting season.
Okay, so, but more directly, you won't have an additional layer of supervision that you will hire a new person to do this?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I'm not aware of any need for additional administration.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I hope that we still have AHFC on the line to walk you through the revenue projects, AHFC projects that are before you.
Mr. Fauske has been waiting patiently to chime in again. If you can identify yourself for the record and who you represent, Mr. Fauske, and then walk us down the spreadsheet, please.
Mr. Chairman, Dan Fauske, CEO of Alaska Housing. With your permission, I have two of the directors here, Jim Girk, Director of Public Housing, and Mark Romig, Director of Planning, that can address the issues that relate directly to their department. So with your permission, we'll start with, I think, Jim Girk.
Okay. Good morning. On item 12, Mr. Chairman,
if you can identify yourself, please.
Oh, I beg your pardon. My name is James Girk. I'm the director of the Public Housing Division.
Okay, and then go ahead and address item on line 12.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Capital Fund program, there's a competitive allocation of $1 billion nationwide. We're anticipating this sum of money based on the formula allocation under line 13. There's not too much detail yet on the HUD webpage about the nature of the competition, but we know that it's supposed to be published very shortly, and we'll know exactly what we'll be competing for. But we believe that number is fairly accurate in terms of what will the total application will be for.
Okay. When do you feel you'll be able to come forward with information to the committee to help us make a decision on whether we should have this included or excluded from the bill?
We know for a fact that the money will be there. The last information that we got from the Department of Housing and Urban Development was that within a couple of weeks, that they were going to have the specifications as far as that distribution is concerned.
Okay, thank you.
Hopefully within a couple of weeks. Item 13, that's actually a formula allocation under our capital fund program. For approximately $3.3 million, we have identified 9 projects throughout the state that are unfunded. They are a great many of them are deferred maintenance type things. We have 3 projects in Anchorage that cover painting, boiler replacement, and substantial concrete work. We have a project in Fairbanks to rebuild a fourplex that was burned down several years ago. We've got another project in Fairbanks that's re-siding of our Spruce Park development, a project in Ketchikan that's going to address some accessibility features and roof repair at one of our senior housing complexes there. In Bethel, we have 2 projects, substantial floor replacement of 117 units of public housing, and also the leveling of those buildings. They sit on permafrost and require that to maintain the integrity of the structure. And then finally, in Nome, we're going to be replacing all the doors and try to better improve the weatherization of the entryways of the 32 units up in Nome.
And if you, question, I guess, better for OMB director, we'd like to always reference if we have the ability then to offset our other capital appropriation bills with any of these items, or is everything just in addition to what we have already in front of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, generally the stimulus funds are not to be used to supplant, so we have to look at specific what we're doing specifically and where we might be able to move some things around.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mark Romick. I'm the director of the Planning Department for Alaska Housing, and I'm going to be talking about items number 14, 15, and 16. The first one is the Emergency Shelter Grant Program, which is an existing federal program administered by HUD. These funds would be used to bolster the existing Emergency Shelter Grant system in Alaska. Can be used for a number of different things, primarily major rehab or conversion of buildings for use as emergency shelters or transitional housing. The regulations governing the ESG program, this stimulus package, just came out on March 19th, and we're going through them right now to make sure that there isn't anything in there that will be difficult for us. At this point, from looking through all the different requirements, we don't anticipate that this will be an issue for us in terms of the timing. We will have a competitive process between now and September when the deadline is to allocate or to commit the funds. assuming that the funds are approved. And we anticipate that we'll be able to allocate all, you know, $1.1 million very easily.
Okay.
Moving on to items 15. Item 15, the Home Investment Partnership Act program, $5.4 million. This program and the next program, item number 16, came about as a consequence of the collapse of the low-income housing tax credit market as a result of the financial situation that the United States finds itself in. The use of the low-income housing tax credits to create affordable housing is contingent on tax people or corporate individuals having income, and since a large number of the former heavy hitters in the tax credit program don't have much income or have a substantial number of tax credits already due to losses, the value of the tax credit has dropped 30% in the space of 8 months. These two programs, the Home Investment Partnership Act and the low-income housing tax or low-income housing grants in lieu of tax credits, are designed to address projects that were in the pipeline but are not going to move forward as a result of the collapse in the equity markets. For Alaska, that means that under the Home Investment Partnership Act program, there are four projects that we have in the pipeline right now that are eligible for these funds. Under the low-income housing grants in lieu of tax credits, there are three projects. If these funds do not become available, it's likely that the majority of those projects will collapse and not go forward. Those projects right now are in Hooper Bay, Fairbanks, Kodiak, Palmer, and Anchorage.
Okay. Next item.
16 is the low-income housing grants in lieu of tax credits, and again, as I said, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation has the ability to exchange up to 85% of 40% of the state's low-income housing tax credit allocation, which could be as much as $28.5 million, and for the purposes of sustaining existing tax credit projects. These funds would be used for all of the 2009 tax credit program or projects that were awarded back in January of this year, they're all ready for construction this summer, assuming that these funds would become available. And that's it for item 16.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is for the university. And oh, they're online. Great. Very good.
Okay. We'll go to, we got two people here, so we'll ask Dennis Weisenberg, the university.
Yeah, Dennis Weisenberg here, and I think Michelle Rizik is going to speak to this first, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
Okay. If you can have Michelle then online. You can identify
Chairman,
yourself.
For the record, this is Michelle Rizik, University of Alaska. The American Reinvestment and Recovery Act directed $3 billion to the National Science Foundation to enable U.S. investment in America's scientific enterprise. And of this funding, NSF will direct $196 million to the University of Alaska for the construction of the Alaska Region Research Vessel. This is additional federal funding for this capital project has been a priority for the University of Alaska in both FY09 and FY010. In FY05, the University of Alaska was given receipt authority of up to $80 million from NSF to purchase the research vessel. Since this time, NSF funding has increased the additional $116 million to accommodate inflation and changes in scope of work over the past couple years.
So then if you could just briefly sum up this item on what is the expected cost of the vessel and what is the ongoing maintenance and operation costs and how the university plans on covering that.
Mr. Chairman, when the ship becomes operational, the National Science Foundation has obligated $10 million annually for scientists to rent the ship. This will fully cover the operating costs of the ship, and non-National Science Foundation-sponsored scientists will also pay user fees to utilize the ship. National Science Foundation will have the ship built, and if UA operates the ship, the economic benefit to Alaska is maximized through creating jobs, Alaska purchases, and Alaska competitive research advantages.
And can you give us an idea on delivery dates and when the ship's going to be built?
Mr. Chairman, the expected time for the ship to be operational is 2013. Right now, we're in the process. The RFP has been issued.
Okay. Any other questions on this item? Okay, next item, please.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that those are...
You've got a $1 million UA economic stimulus, federal receipt authority, competitive, discretionary, and incentive grants?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Also included is $1 million for the University of Alaska as a capital grant placeholder. The University of Alaska plans to pursue economic stimulus grant funding opportunities from various federal agencies in the area of energy, research, technology, and health. As research projects are temporary in nature and carry no ongoing continuation of funding beyond the terms of the contract award.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. Charlie Huggins here from Wasilla. Under the research vessel, the discharge regulation that applies to this vessel would be...
If you can help us with that, please.
Mr. Chairman, this is Michelle Rizik. I'd like to defer that question to Mr. Weisenberg that's online.
Mr. Weisenberg, if you can help Senator Huggins with the discharge question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's, this vessel will be operated under Coast Guard regulations, and the National Science Foundation operates all their research vessels in an approved manner. And as a research vessel, it has certain obligations and also certain abilities to take care of the discharge in a way that's very environmentally sensitive, and that's been a part of the design process of the vessel.
If you could get back to the committee on how you plan on having the ship qualify for the discharge, more specifically than the 30,000-foot view?
Certainly, we'd be happy to do that. Our Third Marine Center Director, who's leading the ship construction, can provide that information. Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to do that.
And I'd also like to know if there's additional costs incurred over the last couple of years on the changing requirements and what those costs are.
Mr. Chairman, the increase in the cost of the project has been because of the increased complexity of the design of the ship, and the design was lengthened to provide better seakeeping capability and scientific capability for the vessel, which is the reason that the cost of the vessel has gone up. And the National Science Foundation also added contingency funds in their request to Congress that were included in the stimulus bill for that cost.
And more specifically, if I could, it's on the discharge issue, where Senator Huggins' question is addressing the discharge. And if you could get some backup and respond back to the committee on the discharge cost, please.
Mr. Chairman, we certainly can provide that information and will.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this is Michelle Rizik again from the University of Alaska. I believe the next item for the University of Alaska is line item 21. As I mentioned previously, in FY05, the University of Alaska received $80 million in federal funding for the research vessel. This is to change the fund source of the $80 million to federal economic stimulus funds from federal receipts.
Okay. Let me try to be more specific on the previous question. It would have to do with would the new ship meet the point of discharge that the cruise ships have to currently meet? And is NOAA and the U.S. Coast Guard discharge criteria lower or different from the cruise ships? So we have an understanding of impacts. Ms. Rayfield, we've had the bells ring. You've been saved by the bell, much like a boxer.
Mr. Chairman, it looks like we've completed. The only other item on your spreadsheet was the a statement in Section 4 regarding the one-time nature of the federal appropriations. And we've included that or incorporated that in the bill language before you. And that basically is the package that was presented.
We're any final questions? Initial final questions, I should say. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside, and we will get with the OMB on when we can go through the items that are not included and work through that process. The next meeting is at 1:30. We'll hear a presentation by from Christine Klein, Deputy Commissioner of Aviation. We've asked her to come forward and talk about the impact of the Anchorage Airport and the economic changes that they're facing, because it has a huge effect on the state's economic base. So we'll be back at 1:30. Meeting adjourned.